ideas. 253-584-1480. And I feel like junk. I'll be honest with you. I got up today. It's like, oh yeah, it's Sunday. Oh jeez. Okay. I got a bit of a throat thing going on, so I should probably. You should have a cavalcade of weird noises. I don't know. This week I decided that I would rehab this old ham radio, and so I've learned how to do electrolysis to remove rust. And playing with water and electricity and weird chemicals, that can't have anything to do with YMCA.
Did opening up this old ham radio release some sort of supernatural ancient disease or sickness?
I might have valley fever now. I don't know. Ask an atheist, 253-584-1480. With me is Nick. How are you doing today?
Great. I think a little better than you, I guess, Sam.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do today. And Mike Warbington, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Sam?
We haven't really figured out a convention there yet.
You know, Mike Warbington has worked this so far for me.
It's a bit long.
I don't know. 32 years and going.
It's like one of those science fiction movies where the aliens, who are basically just people with things on their head, don't understand human names and just call you by your full name all the time. So that might be what we're doing. So we have some interesting announcements. First, right out of the gate, post show today is at Northern Pacific Coffee Company down in. I don't have an address for that. We'll get that later. We just figured that out. We had some communications difficulties today, but there is a segment we haven't done in a while, which we're bringing back to this one because, oh boy. And this one is called And the Horse He Rode In On. And this week, we're talking about a Lebanese library that's been torched for suspicion of blasphemy. A private library managed by 17-year-old Orthodox priest Ibrahim Suraj in Tripoli, Lebanon, was torched on Friday after accusations of blasphemy. Two-thirds of the collection, which include a 400-year-old handwritten manuscripts, were destroyed. Prior to the incident, a brochure offensive to Islam allegedly had been found stuffed into a book. Father Suraj had recently met with Muslim leaders in Tripoli to assure them that he had nothing to do with the brochure. Lebanese officials have decried the incident and have vowed to bring those responsible to justice. Members of the public gathered and vowed to rebuild the institution, dubbed the Pilgrim's Library, and open to readers regardless of religious affiliation. So this has got a little bit of a Library of Alexandria feel to it, doesn't it?
I don't know. It just seems kind of ridiculous to me. If your ideas are so fragile that in order to protect them, you have to torch a library for some tangential connection to someone possibly contradicting you, you need to reevaluate your ideas.
I think so. If your ideas don't stand up to scrutiny or other ideas being even near you, then your idea kind of stinks.
I mean, if the religion doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
No.
So there's amount of faith in it.
Right.
But if you can't even tolerate the existence of other ideas simultaneously, then there's a problem.
Right.
I think this is kind of like if you see a spider on the wall of your garage, crashing into it with your car to kill it. It's destroying a library to get rid of one little, to basically get because of one little pamphlet.
Yeah, 400.
It's really, really sad. It's a lot of needless destruction.
Let's say I enter into Tacoma Public Library and I grab, just for irony, Fahrenheit 451 off the shelves, and I open it up, and a Jack Chick, Dark Dungeons. Let's say it's Dark Dungeons. It's the one about D&D that falls out into my lap, and I go, I can't take it, and I go all John Rambo on the library. That's basically what we're talking about here.
A little bit of an overreaction.
Yeah, a little bit. And 400-year-old manuscripts. It's not like we got a lot of those. Paper doesn't, there's a reason paper's easily recyclable.
And knowing you as well as I do, Sam, I think instead of torching the library because you found a Chick tract, I think you'd probably stuff it in your pocket and stick it in your collection.
Well, that's exactly what I would do. I need another Dark Dungeons. I only have one. And it's totally my fault that Blackleaf died. I just all I can say. Check it out.
To go back to the story, one of the things that kind of strikes me is that the person who owns the library, it's a private library if I understand correctly, disowned and disavowed himself from that pamphlet.
Yeah.
And so where's the threat there? Why is his library being taken out? He's distanced himself from it. He says, this wasn't me. I understand, okay, if your ideas are so fragile that you have to protect them with violence, you're going to be violent towards the people who propose those ideas. Mm-hmm. But if you're just going to be violent to anyone associated with those ideas, then what's to stop? I don't understand. You're You're shooting too broadly.
I'm gonna play conspiracy theory doorknob this week and say, could we be looking at a manufactured situation here? Like somebody's like, I don't like this library, so I'm gonna put in something that says Allah is kind of not good.
That was a plant.
And then yeah, somebody planted it so they could burn it to the ground. I mean, it's not like there isn't precedent for this sort of thing.
But in the same way, we also can't make an assertion that that's what happened because we have no proof to that.
No, I guess I'm.
But
just,
it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I'm doing a terrible radio thing. I'm wondering aloud. It's the Curdo question. Was this a conspiracy theory? No, we don't know.
It's such an absurd kind of situation to begin with. It kind of breeds that speculation.
Yeah, it does. Those statues in Afghanistan. The thing is, we stopped talking about blasphemy for a while, and it's not because blasphemy problems ended. They're just as bad as they've always been, and that's kind of part of the reason why we need to bring this segment back, is there are still people of any religion you care to name being persecuted somewhere in the world, because that's the way the world is, and we should talk about it, and especially, including atheists. We're not, we may not have a religion that doesn't stop people from getting onto atheists when things get weird in certain parts of the world. I'd like to thank Charles from Seattle this week for meeting Peggy's challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, that was good. And then we have an email, and this is an interesting one. It's about language, and this is Francois from the internet, and he says, I cannot agree with your definition of secular humanist. This comes from last week's episode where we talked about the definition of secular humanism, clearly. It doesn't equal atheism. You can have both secular and humanists who believe in God. Nowadays, secular applies to non-religious phenomena. Humanism is a philosophical concept which sees humans as the most important subject. Therefore, you can have humanist religions in which humans are the quintessence of creation. An example of secular humanist organizations is the Red Cross. They are not religious, but neither are they atheists. Oh boy. I could unpack that one for a while.
Well, it's a matter of defining our terms.
Yeah.
And in this case, secular means one thing. It means something that doesn't really have anything to do with religion in a lot of ways. And humanism means something else.
Right.
Humanism can apply to all sorts of people. It can apply to non-theistic deists.
Mm-hmm.
They are non-denominational deists. It can apply to religious people who also consider them humanists, and it can apply to atheists who consider themselves humanists.
Well, here's the thing. Speaking of someone who is the president of a secular humanist organization, secular humanist is one phrase. It's when we use that phrase here on the show, specifically when we talk about secular humanism versus humanism, I'll use a programming term here. Secular humanism is atomic. It's a unit. You can't separate them and treat them as two different words, because secular humanism is a specific branch of humanism. There are Christian humanists. There are Jewish humanists. There are agnostic humanists. Mm-hmm. Those people mm-hmm. exist. Humanism is a thing. Secularism is a thing. Secular humanism is yet a third thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about. So if you go to the American Humanist Association, they have something called the Humanist Manifesto, and I think they're on the third version of it. I like the first one because it got weird socialist stuff in it, and then the McCarthy thing happened, and then they did Humanist Manifesto 2, and all that stuff was gone. The history involved with this document is very interesting. But it actually explicitly talks about what secular humanism means versus humanism. And in that case, it is specifically atheistic. It is specifically without religion.
Well, you're using the term secular here to modify humanism. You're
right.
Talking about a specific brand of humanism, a specific subset of humanism.
Right.
So in this case, you're not talking about secular and humanism. You're talking about a certain brand.
Right.
So in this case, the secular modifier is calling out that this is the brand of humanism that's without religion. That's
right.
Going back to what secular means, is something that's absent religion.
Yeah, and when you have a secular, and he mentions the Red Cross, which is a secular, does he call it a secular organization or a humanist
organization? He calls it a secular humanist organization, which I'm not sure I would agree with.
I wouldn't agree. I'm not certain I would agree with that either.
It would strictly be a secular organization. That would be the appropriate use of that term, as far as I can tell.
So, yeah, they don't take an official stance on religion, so they're just kind of irreligious.
Right. It's a religion, and I think we have to be very careful about this, because you're falling into the trap that a lot of religious people fall into, which is if you don't have a stance on religion, that by that by definition makes you an atheist or a humanistic organization? No, not at all. The Red Cross is an organization concerned with helping people in disasters, with medical care, with stuff like that. There are people who work with the Red Cross who are religious. There are people who work with the Red Cross who are not. Religion is sort of orthogonal to the point of the Red Cross.
Yeah, it's on a completely different axis.
Right.
Well, there's all sorts of organizations that are, you know, secular. Your coffee house could be a secular coffee house.
Yeah.
Your library is a secular library. It
right.
just doesn't have a religious affiliation. You're not saying whether or not, you know, they believe in a religion or not, or the people involved in that organization are religious or not.
Now, I'm not going to say this isn't confusing. You know, it is, the wording here is confusing, but it's confusing because the history of atheism and humanism and secularism is kind of confusing. You have to watch out. It gets weird. It weaves back and forth. You got, you know, David Hume in there. You've got a bunch of other people, and he might not have called himself a humanist, but then blah, blah, blah. And it just, this weird, sinewy history thing. And you have to be very, very, very careful with it. And just keep in mind that you can be secular, you can be humanist, you can be a secularist and a humanist, but that doesn't necessarily make you a secular humanist. It's weird. We might do a show just on that someday. But we have a call. This is Joseph from Los Angeles, and he's got a question about miracle healing. How you doing today? Hello? 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 Oh, there you are. Joseph, you with us?
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. my question was about miracle healing.
Okay.
I understand this is probably a question where, you know, I can't just ask it and then you could just give me an answer. You probably would have to investigate it. But I guess I've been looking around and I've seen some stuff on videos, maybe on YouTube, and I've come across someone that's doing miracle healing. Now, I've tried to look and see if there's any fault in it and I guess criticize, well, maybe this isn't true. And I really can't find anything, so I guess I just wanted your opinion on this. What would you consider something that would actually be a miracle if someone was healed?
What would I consider a miracle that somebody
like if you could
healed?
Say, okay, you know, that didn't happen through natural means, then I guess that could be considered something that was done unnaturally.
Okay. Well, I'll start out by, I'm going to dodge the question, but I promise you we'll get back to it. You said you were looking at videos on YouTube. You have to be very careful. There are some very big names in miracle healing and faith healing and stuff like that. That is a well that really should be dry, but it isn't because we have a lot of people with medical problems. And when you have somebody who's in pain and you have somebody who's hurting, you're going to have people who prey on them for P-R-E-Y. In this case, for whatever reason, there are names that ring horribly, both through the atheism community and through the religious communities. Peter Popoff, for example, what he would do is he would have people write their names on little pieces of paper before everything began. And then he had a little radio earpiece on, and people would radio him, the names of people, and he would put his hand on his head and go, "I'm going to talk to Margaret," you know, and it looks miraculous because you don't know he has a radio, and then Margaret's in a walker. And she says, "Be healed," and then she walks a few steps, and then God, you know, he says, "God has healed her." But what you don't see is what happens afterwards. She doesn't leave without her walker. She's using her walker to get out of there. You never talk to the people who have cancer a year later to see if they're still in remission. You don't talk to the people who, who have a weird, you know, a horrible illness that's causing them to waste away, because generally they're not alive anymore because they weren't actually healed. And that's something you have to be very careful of there.
Well, I think to answer the original question, what would it take for me to believe a miracle? And I don't think that's something that I necessarily have to answer. What I would need is for you to prove it to me.
Right.
If you're gonna make some sort of claim about someone having healing powers, let me see those in action. Let me investigate your claims. Show me how it works. Show me what you did.
Right.
Show me the results. And
right. You know, I that's a point well taken, I guess. And that's why I kind of in the beginning said I really can't, you know, offer you anything except for you to investigate yourself.
Right.
I mean, if you could look it up and see it for yourself, and I guess that's how you could validate it.
Right. Well, that's sort of what I'm saying here is that there is a tradition among not necessarily in the atheism community, but in you know the psychop folks, the people who debunk things. I can't remember what they're called right now, but there is a history of that. And James Randi is a great example of that. James Randi actually took down Peter Popoff. James Randi also had done psychic surgery on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He actually did the things that people call psychic surgery, which is another type of faith healing. It's not Christian. Well, it may not be Christian, but it is another type of faith healing. What I'm saying is we have looked into it for ourselves, and we've found it without lack of evidence. In my case, in order to prove it to me as an effective treatment, you're basically going to have to do all of the things that standard treatment uses. It has to be repeatable. It has to be falsifiable. It has to have certain evidence. If you can show me that when we do this, this happens, then I'm going to start to believe you. But when we start muddying the waters, when you start saying you have to believe, you have to have faith, you can't actually look at the tumor because that would be second guessing God. Then I'm going to start questioning that, because if it's alternative medicine, this is something people say a lot. The problem with alternative medicine is that if it works, it ceases to be alternative medicine and just becomes medicine.
Mm-hmm. And a YouTube video, at least for me personally, does not make proof. You can put anything on film as you want. I mean,
yeah.
we made Star Wars.
Right.
That's, amazing
Star Wars is not a documentary.
Yeah, you're going to want to look into the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, which is part of the CFI. They have a large library of these sort of situations for you to look at. So I encourage you to take a look at that. And again, yeah, good. Thank you for your empiricism. Thank you for seeing for yourself. But I'm going to invite you to look a little deeper.
You said there was somewhere or some place I could actually submit what I've seen, because the place, the person I'm talking about has been around since the 80s, but he's out in Africa.
Oh,
they're doing their stuff out there.
I think I know who you're talking about.
And I wrote this station. I think it's called AskAnAtheist.com. I wrote, but I haven't received.
No, we are AskAnAtheist.tv.
Okay.
So go ahead and send us the data there, and I promise you we'll follow up on it. But it is time for us to move on. This is
okay, Ask. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And this is kind of a mess. I don't know what I'm doing. That, you know, you can tell I'm a totally professional here. Yeah, Ask an Atheist.
You made
when
it
we
work.
Come back
Yay.
From the break, we're going to talk about humanist celebrants.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful they cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at Radio versus the Martians.
Psst, hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Joining us now is Robert Ray. He is an active humanist from Granite Falls, Washington. He serves as president of Humanists of North Puget Sound, is a board member at large of Humanists of Washington, which means we work together. He blogs at the Quixotic. How do you pronounce that?
That's the Quixotic.
That is Quixotic. Okay, yeah. I'm horrible. It's one of those words that I read and never say. And recently became a certified humanist celebrant. He joins us in the studio to discuss developments with the Oak Harbor City Council. How are you doing today?
Good. How about you, Sam?
Very good. So, actually, as a humanist celebrant, in the last segment, we talked about the difference between humanist, atheist, and secular humanist. I was wondering, am I getting that right as somebody who does something in humanism?
Yeah, actually, the way that you put it was exactly right. The idea that secularism and humanism are two separate things, but when you bring them together, secular humanism is inherently atheistic.
Yeah. So that was it for me. It's basically a combination of two things. So we have this really interesting situation in Oak Harbor that I'd like to discuss with you. But to bring sort of some background in on that, we've got somebody on the line from us. Hey, it's Tom from the Secular Radio Podcast, right? Hello.
Thanks, man.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
No problem. So I understand that you got the ball rolling on this in Oak Harbor.
Well, kind of, sort of. Let me first point out that I have a voice thing going on just like yourself.
Oh, wow.
Please excuse that.
No problem.
Yeah, I mean, back in May of last year, there was a meeting there at the Oak Harbor City Council, and they were going to discuss invocations. And as my understanding is, they were actually prepared to take a vote on it at that time. I didn't find out until about 45 minutes before the meeting that this was going on, and I've never attended an Oak Harbor City Council meeting before in my life, even though I live there.
Right.
So I sort of gathered up my notes, and I went up there, and I was allowed to speak the way they do it there. You are allowed 3 minutes to speak before the council, and I've never done anything like that before. But I just, I'm a secular humanist. I'm an atheist, and I don't want these invocations in my city council. So amongst the group there, and there were about 25 or 30 citizens there, and probably 10 to 12 of us actually spoke that day. I was the only one against them, which kind of shocked me. There was not one other person in the room
that is strange.
Who was against these invocations.
So what happened? So I assume that they were talking about invocations. Was there a bill or something, and did it pass? Or
no, what happened, actually, there were so many people had signed up to speak that they decided to not actually vote on the issue that night. They were just going to table it for a later meeting.
Okay.
But they did allow everyone to speak, to have their 3 minutes, and it's kind of funny. They actually literally have a person there that rings a bell at the 3-minute mark. And they have to stop talking. So they're pretty strict about that.
Yeah.
But sometime later, I think about 6 weeks or so later, there was another meeting, and I did go speak at that one as well. And again, much to my dismay, I was the only person there speaking out against those invocations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was shortly after that, I spoke to Pastor Tim Geist. He came on the Secular Radio show there, and we had sort of a debate discussion. And then sometime after that, your other guest there, Robert Ray, joined me on Secular Radio, and we talked briefly about it.
Yeah, very good. So why don't you, speaking of your show, why don't you plug your radio show for a moment?
Oh, thanks very much. I do an internet radio show out of Oak Harbor. Actually, it's out of Coopville, but it's on Whidbey Island.
Yeah.
It's called Secular Radio, and we have new episodes every Monday at 7 p.m., and if anyone out there would like to listen, just merely click in whidbeyair.org, and you will find my show there, as well as many other local shows that are produced there on the island. But that's a great website, whidbeyair.org. You can find my show, Secular Radio, as well as some others. But also, if you don't mind, Sam, let me take a moment here to thank someone.
Oh, sure.
Sam, Gwen Sam is my producer and my editor and my good friend there. And this show, I would have never been able to have Secular Radio if she had okayed it. She's a member of the board there at the station. And there was, as you might imagine, some controversy involved.
Yeah.
And but she stood up for me, and she's backed me and supported me the whole way. So if you're listening there, Gwen, thank you so much for your support. And let's keep rocking.
Yeah, sounds like there's an interesting story there. I think I might have to follow up on that sometime. We'll talk
for sure.
We'll talk soon.
All okay, right. Thank you, Sam. Sam.
No problem. So this is where you enter the story. You are a humanist celebrant. What entails being a humanist celebrant?
So a humanist celebrant is basically the clergy level of humanism. You tend to lead meetings, mm-hmm. and you can hold marriages,
right.
and funerals and all the ceremonies that people have throughout their lives. So that's basically what humanist celebrants do.
Okay. How long have you been a humanist celebrant?
I became a humanist celebrant in October 2013.
Oh, so just recently?
Yeah, just recently.
Is it a class? What? How does that work out?
So you apply through the Humanist Society, which mm-hmm. is a branch of the American Humanist Association, and then once you get approved, because there's some background checks and some character references and stuff like that, they give you the celebrancy. There are some classes you can take,
right?
But I'm still working on getting those in.
Okay. That's really interesting. So he approached you about the Oak Harbor situation with the invocations. Did you contact Oak Harbor at that point, or how did that work?
When he first contacted me, it was kind of, well, we should maybe do something about this. So we talked about it. And once I did get my celebrant, I said, you know what? Legally, I am clergy level. They can't turn me down.
Right.
So I said, we're going to do it. So I decided to write the council members and Mayor Dudley, which I did.
Okay, and they just said, was there any flack? Did they try and dodge out of it in any way, or was it just...
Well, at first they tried to say, well, you're not exactly local, so let's find us a local humanist. So I said, okay, let's talk to Tom, because he's a local humanist. Right. Tom said, well, I'd prefer if Robert did it. And so got a letter back from Mayor early last week, said, hey, we'd like you to do the invocation.
I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
Do you think that, it sounds like Tom was initially against there being an invocation. Do you think that there being an invocation, doing the humanist invocation at a council meeting, lends credence to the claim that humanism is a religion?
No, I don't think it does. I think it's the same thing that atheists and humanists have been doing for a long time with displays at Christmas.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. We're trying to get either on the field or get everybody off the field. So.
Absolutely. I really hate that argument, because this is actually the one place where me and Alain de Botton agreed when he was on the show, gosh, 2 years ago now, is that the reason people see these things like marriages and weddings and funerals as religious is that they've been taken on by religion. That's just been absorbed by religion. People want to get together as a community. People want to have ceremonies when they get married. People die. And people want to remember them when they die, which means that we need to have ceremonies for these sorts of things, even if we're not religious. Some people don't need them. That's pretty common in my family. My grandmother actually refused to have any sort of ceremony at all, so we had a picnic. But that was, and it was literally just a picnic. And that's kind of what it goes down to. But I think it's necessary. It's an important part of building a community, and I think we need people like that.
Right. One of the first times I did a wedding, I was talking to my neighbor, and he said, how does an atheist do a wedding? I said, same thing Christians do, just we don't mention God.
Yeah. Yeah, people get married. It's a fairly straightforward concept.
So let me ask you, what kind of things would you say? What kind of things would you say during your invocation?
I do have a speech written, and basically it's to promote the future generations. That's what I'm saying during this invocation. Juan Mendez gave a great one, which I don't remember exactly what he said, but out of Arizona.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I did look up a few others, and there've been people who quoted Mark Twain and other Carl Sagan. So you do the humanist.
I would imagine Carl Sagan to be fairly popular. He's really good at catching that kind of cool sounding space stuff, and honestly, that's the kind of stuff that that I would want to have in my wedding ceremony if we had one. Now, I got married in a brewery, and it, you know, Rich Lyons did it, and it was like just a 5-minute thing, and people were cracking jokes in the middle of it. That's my kind of wedding ceremony. But so what made you decide to become a celebrant in this case?
Well, I felt that the community needed something like that. The nuns and the atheists are becoming more and more popular, and they need someone who can represent them in their weddings and their funerals and naming ceremonies and things like that.
Right, and so you just it seemed like something the community was lacking, so you decided
right.
to take it on.
Yeah, okay. And I'm really good at picking up what isn't there.
When did you how did you find out that this was something you could do? Was it you were noticing its lack and you started researching it, or?
Well, the Humanist North Puget Sound, which I'm the president of, is an AHA chapter.
Okay.
So we get regular updates, and I saw earlier last year that they had expanded their celebrancy program
mm-hmm.
to include lay leaders and associate celebrants and just more than just a celebrant.
Okay.
So I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. It's what I need to do.
So do you mostly work from, do you write stuff and work a script out with people? What is the process? Let's say, let's take a good news, like a nice one, a wedding. What would be the process for putting together, for being a humanist celebrant at a wedding ceremony? Do you contact the folks involved and put a ceremony together or?
Yeah, pretty much. Right now I use a service that puts them in contact with me when there's a quoting process that goes on. And once we get together, we decide on, you know, are they going to write their own vows? Am I going to help them with their own vows? What do they want their script to be like? How much fun do they want to have?
Right.
And we just go from there, and we just pretty much customize a script for each individual couple.
So I ducked out of this one myself, so I'm actually kind of curious. What do humanist vows look like?
They look just like everybody else's vows.
Okay. So. Just without, just sort of scrape off the god bits? Or
basically,
without the superstition and supernatural.
Yeah, yeah. So I just sort of wonder, because it's like, here's an opportunity. We're in new territory when it comes to this sort of stuff in a way. I know, atheists have been getting married for thousands of years, but for an atheist wedding in modern times, there isn't a program for that. Right. So it's like, it seems like here's an opportunity for some new ideas. And do you see that a lot, or is it really, okay, I need something that looks like a wedding for my religious parents, or so I need something that almost mentions God or sounds like it's mentioning God but doesn't actually mention God at all?
Yeah, I've actually run into people who would prefer it that way.
Really? You know? Okay. Is that common, or is that
not entirely? There's kind of a 50-50 mix.
Interesting. So if people want to get a hold of you for things, how would they contact you?
So I do have another website set up for that. It's called PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Puget Sound Celebrant.
Yep. And that's probably the best way to get a hold of me for that.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. And so Humanists of North Puget Sound, you have a commercial.
Yeah.
So if people want to, North Puget Sound, when I first moved here, it sounded really ultra specific to me. And then I actually went up to the North Puget Sound and realized it was basically the size of New England. And so it's a big group. So if people want to, it covers a lot of territory. So if people want to be a part of Humanists of North Puget Sound, where would they go?
Go to humanistnps.org. That's our main website.
Okay.
And you can contact us directly through there.
Great. This is... This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to do some more current events and catch up on some emails.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What?
Humanist Center?
Yeah, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Got some really fun news today. Coming out of Ireland, Irish president gives Christless address and rebuffs religious inquiry. This comes to us from The Independent. Despite having sworn a presidential oath with references to Almighty God, Irish President Michael Higgins' Christmas addresses for the past 3 years have contained no mention of Christ or Christianity. This caught the attention of Defense Forces head chaplain Owen Thin, whose Christmas homily lamented the change in society with references to meanings of Christmas, and Defense Force Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Connor O'Boyle immediately contacted the Higgins administration to apologize for any embarrassment caused to the president. This past September, his address asserted that the message of Christmas, shared by many faiths, invites us to care for one another and to be, in an ethical sense, one another's keepers. Higgins has described himself as spiritual but not religious. His office is insisting that it is inappropriate to ask if he is an atheist. I like that end. So why does this matter?
Yeah, I like that story. I think that's appropriate for the Irish president to not mention Christ or religion in his Christmas address. I mean, Christmas is a holiday that's celebrated by all sorts of people of all sorts of walks of life. And I don't think it's necessarily appropriate for a political leader to discuss, you know, to invoke religion in his address.
Right.
What I think is even more offensive is the fact that they took Saturn out of Saturnalia.
Oh, geez. That's a stock one. Yeah, I like this. And this is really how politics should be. You know, somebody asks you, are you a Christian? And the answer really should be none of your darn business. Except slightly more strongly worded in that case. But, you know, Ireland is a different situation, obviously, politically than here. It's the government there is, I think, explicitly Catholic in some places. I remember doing this interview, and I don't recall immediately.
Well, they are definitely a lot more religious than, well, a lot more Catholic than us.
Yeah.
To the point where we have done some stories here on Ask an Atheist, specifically about, like, the Catholic Church getting in the way of women's health care.
Well, actually, it was the Irish blasphemy law that got our interest in blasphemy.
Oh, yes,
started.
That too.
That was the passage of the Irish blasphemy law was the first blasphemy story Ask an Atheist ever did back when we were a TV show. So, yeah, and as a result, I've actually become Facebook friends, Facebook acquaintances, I guess, with a lot of folks at Atheist Ireland, and the stuff they talk about and the situation they face there, it's really interesting, and it's nice to have that external perspective, that there's other arguments going on than the politics and religion argument that we're having here in the United States.
Well, I don't know. I think it's good that the president is not bringing religion into his Christmas address, but it also kind of concerns me that he feels the need to make a Christmas address in the first place.
Well, do you really have a problem with the concept of a Christmas address?
Oh, well, I mean, a weekly address to your constituents is one thing, but to address the nation on the occasion of a specifically religious holiday,
yeah.
I'm kind of two minds about it, is I guess what I'm getting at.
Okay. You see, I've always advocated that Christmas has become kind of non-religious. It's evolved away from that, I think. Where do you stand on that?
I think that it's basically just a cultural event that's happening. That happens every year, and the president chooses to speak out on that day and say, hey, let's be good to each other. Let's have fun. Don't do anything crazy.
And then, you know, I guess Christmas... I've heard that Christmas is a big holiday in Japan. I've never been there, so I can't say for certain. And, you know, Christianity, there are Christians there, but it's, you know, it's not a Christian nation the way that Ireland is, and it doesn't live in a Christian substrate the way it is the United States, but there's a lot of commercialism in the holiday. I mean, entire industries revolve around the concept that people get together and do stuff in December. So I'm kind of okay with that.
Now, for Japan, my source on this is the show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, so it could be apocryphal, but I have heard that the tradition in Japan for Christmas is to eat fried chicken.
Really?
Yes.
That's a new one. So,
and please correct me if I'm wrong.
I would like to know. That's a new one.
Yeah. Email us.
Yeah, I definitely. Go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red button, and let us know, because that fried chicken. I heard strawberry and whipped cream cake, which I'm kind of okay
with. Oh, yeah, there's also
okay
the
with.
Japanese Christmas cake.
Yeah, which sounds fantastic, but fried chicken is a new one on me. So
I like fried chicken.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that's generally...
It's not our tradition on Christmas.
No, and actually, I mean, my tradition now is to get Chinese food on Christmas. We've sort of hybridized Becky's Christmas traditions and my Christmas traditions. So we order Chinese food and watch Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
That's stereotypical, but... You know.
Well, I did that
with you this
year.
What else are you going to do on Christmas, really?
I did that with you this year, and it was fun.
Well, yeah, we thought it was just going to be, you know, me, Becky, and a couple other people, but we ended up... I guess there's a lot of people going, cannot handle family anymore, must get out. So we ended up like 25 people at our house. It was great. Had a wonderful time. So we have an email, Alan from Oregon, and he writes, why do you suppose the term life stance fell out of favor? I think that the use of life stance for the umbrella term could possibly change the nature of the debate in favor by getting religion out of our terminology when describing religious preference. For me, it also conveys the thought that religion is a personal opinion, not a fact.
I'm not sure life stance was ever really in favor. I'd never heard that term before. So you could say that it's fallen out of favor, but I think what you're asking is why hasn't it been widely adopted?
Yeah.
I think I have no problem with people asking me my religious preference because a legitimate answer in that is not applicable.
Well, it's weird.
Well, life stance is also kind of an awkward term. I mean, when I read it, I thought we were talking about the A word, abortion.
Oh, okay.
Whether your stance on life is pro-life or anti-life or whatever. That's what it called out to me.
It's got a weird Legend of Zelda feel to it for me in some way. But it also kind of, it has sort of a new agey feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of people who, when they hear that word, they don't understand what it means, just like you said. And so I think it would be a lot easier, and if you didn't want to bring religion into it, just to say, what about worldview?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, worldview is one that I use.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though, about this, is a lot of Christians and a lot of preachers like to find cheap ways to strengthen their argument by trying to break terminology. And life stance to them... What you're going to do, if you try to get life stance adopted, you're going to get like, you know, oh, no, this isn't that's life stance for me. No, we're talking about the truth. I don't think changing the name here is necessarily going to change the problem. I refer you to the Left Behind novels, where they, in the middle of the book, they're talking to the rabbi who became a Christian, et cetera, et cetera. And they say, you know, Christianity is not a religion, because religion is man trying to reach God, and Christianity is God trying to reach man. So it's the opposite. Therefore, it's not religion, QED. And I'm like, okay.
Huh?
Like, we can fight with terminology all day, but I like worldview. There, even in the atheism community, we like in the first segment, we were talking about secular humanism versus secularism.
It all just seems kind of pedantic.
Terminology.
Well, like, worldview works, because what you're asking somebody is, how do you see the world?
And right.
That's exactly what's in the term worldview.
Yeah, I guess... You know, terminology is good. Having a really flexible terminology is good because you can get sort of nuances of meanings. But it does, in this is one of those situations where I think maybe it's a little too flexible and it makes it difficult to communicate sometimes. Like the secularism means this and humanist means that. So secular humanist means this. And I don't feel bad. You know, I don't think the guy's Francois being mean when he talks about it. I think it really is just a failure of communication in this case because things have just, humans get so fragmented, you know, like the Judean People's Front and the People's Front of Judea, or the Tacoma Auto Mall and the Auto Mall of Tacoma, which are two actual businesses here. If you go to my Facebook page, is actually I think it's Tacoma Auto Mall. Please don't confuse us with Auto Mall of Tacoma. Yeah, it's this is just how humans when people, you know, when their thoughts evolve and they grow and they figure stuff out. They want a new name for things. I mean, remember when, like, remember the Brights? Well, they're still around, but are you familiar with the Brights?
I'm not familiar with the Brights.
I think that's a term that the Richard Dawkins people came up with to describe pro-science atheists at some point.
Well, I think Brights is the word that I use to call my high beams on my car.
Well, joining us now to talk about fried chicken in Japan is Mike Gillis. How you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, Sam?
Not too bad. So you know about this?
Yeah, actually, it's specifically Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's their big day. It's like the Super Bowl is for beer companies in Japan. And specifically, people eat Kentucky Fried Chicken in Japan on Christmas.
Oh, that sounds like brilliant marketing.
I'm not trying to get them extra money unless you're in Japan on Christmas. I mean,
yeah.
I assume you'd know about it already. But in Scandinavia, and I think it's in Norway, that people specifically watch Donald Duck cartoons on Christmas Eve.
I have heard that.
I've heard that too.
Donald?
So, yeah, there's a lot of crazy Christmas traditions that have nothing to do with Jesus.
Yeah.
And lots of stuff out there.
So you would come down on the side of being okay with a holiday address by the executive of a country?
A holiday address, sure. Not necessarily a Christmas address, because there's more than one holiday going on. So,
well, yeah.
I mean, clearly there's a lot of people celebrating certain holidays and during that time of year, and it makes a lot of sense for a head of state to address that and say, hey, let's all be nice to each other for a change.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. It's not like they're going on there and hit Jesus, Jesus, Jesus the way that that chaplain wants people to.
Right, right, right.
Because I think what they just want is they want to reaffirm the whole Christian nation malarkey in their head and tell themselves that this is just another stamp of ownership we have.
Right.
And every time they don't have it, because sometimes even if they give that address and say all of those things that cross cultural boundaries, like, hey, let's not jerks, they should be happy with that. But notice the thing they get angry about is the lack of Jesus. So it says to me, that's really what they want. Well, they want the president telling people, Jesus, Jesus, hey, look, you're on our side. Everyone else, you should feel different
if
you don't agree with us.
That's the war on Christmas thing right there. Is phase one of the war on Christmas is that you say, you're not calling it Christmas, you're calling it the holidays. And then that takes, you know, that takes the reason out of it. Da-da-da-da-da. And so they want to make it about Christmas. And then phase two is, see, it's Christmas. It's got Christ in the name. That means religion is everything. Everything, blah blah blah, and that's the problem.
Yeah, it's weird because I think that a secular version of Christmas is what most people celebrate anyways. And if you go into department stores that are just plastered with Christmas, even a lot, and it's just Santa stuff.
Absolutely,
it's holly, it's mistletoe. The Jesus stuff is there. I mean, you hear it in all the Christmas music every so often, but there's a lot more songs about Santa than there are about, you know, Jesus.
Right,
frankly, the Santa stuff is more fun. The same thing with Easter and the bunny. Way more fun than watching a guy get crucified.
And which is bigger? In someone's house, a creche or a Christmas tree?
If you're one of those people who finds watching somebody get crucified more interesting than getting gifts,
well, it's interesting. Yes, it's not really something I want to do.
Yeah.
Interesting isn't necessarily good.
Yeah, the Roman Empire kind of ended. Anyway, thanks.
The riot's interesting. I don't want to be there, though.
Thanks a bunch for your call, Mike.
No problem.
All right. We have an email. This is Jason from Oregon, and he writes, my son's school had a winter program in December where the children sing holiday season and secular Christmas-themed songs. I'm personally fine with having such an event at a church. The thing I don't like is the blatant display of religious decorations and information. On the stage was, and here's what was going on, a giant cross off to the right side. I'm fairly certain it's not mounted and could have easily been removed. Upon entry to the event center, there were three tables with stacks of pamphlets belonging to different Christian organizations, and in the staging room for the classes, there were Christian-themed books and pictures easily accessible to the kids. Shouldn't the schools have to take the appropriate measures to move or cover certain religious decor or pamphlets when school-sanctioned events are taking place? I plan on filing a complaint with the school district, so any help would be appreciated. I've done a fair share of searching for any information on the internet of a similar scenario, but have not found anything. So we actually have sort of a range of opinions here.
I think you should file a complaint. I think it's up to the school to provide a space that's not promoting a particular religion. If it's a you know, government school, government shouldn't be in the business of endorsing a religion.
Right.
Holding an event in a church is one thing, but if that church is openly displaying their, you know, aspects of their religion, I think you have a good complaint. They should be kind of make an effort to conceal that or to provide a space that's appropriate for a school event.
I know we discussed this earlier, and I think I've been swayed by you guys. I at first I was thinking it was a little much ado about nothing, but yeah, it is the school's responsibility.
Well,
as a public institution, a secular, supposed to be secular institution, they need to try and provide for some kind of secular space for, you know.
Wow, we almost had a disagreement. What is much ado about nothing?
What
mean
was
in
your
this
original
case?
My original thing, it's like, so what? They have it in a church. It's probably in a small town. We don't know where in Oregon this person is.
Yeah.
I'm guessing if it's happening in a church, it might be in a small town where the church is the largest building in town.
Yeah.
And that's a distinct possibility. At first I was the religious themed things like the cross and the biblical scriptures that were placed in areas that were well within reach of children and everyone there. Of course they should have made it look like they made an effort to take some of it away.
Well, here's the thing. My first thought was, is this really the biggest space in town? Is this really the only space available? You know, sometimes schools have cafeterias. Maybe you need to do multiple small shows rather than one huge show. Might be one thing. It's cool that the church is offering their space to the school. But if they're leaving tables full of pamphlets out and Christian stuff everywhere, mm-hmm. it's not really cool.
They're offering yeah. their space in order to promote their religion in
yeah,
that case.
And they're looking for a cheap way to violate the establishment clause.
Which I can't say is necessarily the case, but judging by the email.
Tables of pamphlets, yeah, I think.
That sounds like...
You could easily move that, and you don't leave those out during the week because they'll get knocked over, and that was
In the same way, I think it would be a good idea to complain to the school district, but like if it got to the level of like calling the FFRF to file a lawsuit, then that's when I would say...
Why not?
Because I think you need to pick your battles. I don't think this is a big enough thing to file a lawsuit over, because it's something that is relatively small. I would complain to the school district. I wouldn't file a lawsuit.
Doesn't that sort of take the teeth out of it, though? Oh yeah, I'll complain, but I won't do anything about it, because
if the school district says, well, you know, poo poo on you, we're not gonna, you know, we're going to have it in a we're gonna, you know, not just have a secular winter holiday celebration, we're gonna have a Christmas and Jesus centered school celebration next year just to spite you. That's when I would probably say call the FFRF.
That is the thing that happens. But, I mean, what I'm hearing when you say that is that we should only fight for our rights when things are appropriate. I don't really see that argument very well. Because this is school. This is where your children learn.
Well, maybe...
This is prime indoctrination time. And if somebody's surreptitiously putting Christian stuff in there, and you complain about it, and it's still happening, and they won't do anything about it, yeah, I think
well,
it's
of course,
time.
If you complain about it and nothing happens, they keep on doing it, and then that's when you might want to step it up. But in the same, if they say, well, okay, you complain, sorry about that, it won't happen again, and they actually follow through with it, then
yeah.
okay.
Well, I think you're right. The first step is to file a complaint.
Right.
And if it's a legitimate complaint and you've got, you know, Constitution on your side, then the next logical step is to file a lawsuit. But you're right, I wouldn't come out guns a-blazing and slap them with a lawsuit to begin with.
But that's not what I heard. Is what I heard from Nick was, and maybe I got this wrong, was... I would file a complaint, but I wouldn't take it any farther than that, period. But then you followed it up, and I'm trying to find when the line where I wouldn't follow up with a lawsuit to I follow a lawsuit is. Like, for example, what if they file a complaint and they just drag, and it just goes on for a year, and they say, oh yeah, we'll do it, but it's still, you know, it's a year later and it's still going on. Would you consider legal options then?
Only to expedite the, you know, the process of what I started.
Right.
But maybe it's just the fact that I'm not a very confrontational person. I wouldn't personally choose this as something to get my knickers in a twist about.
Okay. But
it would rub me the wrong way.
Think about the wider context, though. This is your kid, you're an atheist, and people are trying to use his time at public school to make him do stuff that you don't agree with and don't believe in. To me, that does not seem small at all. That seems very large.
I guess I'd have to cross that bridge when I get to it. I don't know how I would react in that because I don't have any kids.
I think some parents might just say they would take that as a learning opportunity to explain to their kids what that is and what they themselves believe about it.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that probably the majority of even atheist parents wouldn't necessarily go to the step of filing a lawsuit,
or possibly even you could use this as a learning experience with your kids, like teach them to be critical of things that they read and things that they see and things that adults tell them.
And I like the idea of filing a complaint, and you know what you can do is get your kids involved in the process of filing the complaint.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, but I think if you're not willing to back it up with you know actually trying to get it enforced, mm-hmm. that weakens us in the future. Be prepared to go all the way or don't go at all.
It becomes a, you know, polite suggestion rather than a
yeah.
You know,
well, be prepared,
complaint.
But just I would hope that it didn't come to that.
Well, that would be nice, but there is a history of school boards sort of ignoring these sort of complaints until they hit lawsuit status. And there's the only way in a substrate like this where people ignore us, the only way where you can get your rights, unfortunately, is to to have to fight for them, and that does mean legally. Now, for resources to look at, I would suggest you contact the legal department at the American Humanist Association and the FFRF, and actually contact a few of them, see who's willing to take it, because I've talked to them all, and they don't immediately go legal. They will often suggest to you a number of things you can do, including how to best file a complaint. They'll be happy to give you resources, because this is what they do. And if you're a member of those if you're a member of one of those organizations, definitely contact them. But that's really where I would go. And this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me was Mike Warbington and Nick Kennedy. Thank you, Robert Ray and Tom Smith. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. Email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. We're going to be at Northern Pacific Coffee Company in an hour. See you guys next week.
Clay Radio.